The Corvallis chapter of SURJ, showing up for racial justice. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, The Digital Divide talks to Christine Hassel of Geek Girl Con about empowering women and girls to pursue their love of science, technology, literature, and gaming. These cable programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO. There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras. So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
I'm out to sing songs. It'll prove to you that this is your world. And that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that'll make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Moving On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. The aftermath of violence, however, is bitterness. And this is the thing I'm concerned about. Let us fight passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of justice and freedom. Let's be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation have completely crumbled in Montgomery, that we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
This is the beloved community on KBOO, 90.7 in Portland, 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, and across the internet at kboo.fm. The beloved community is heard monthly on KBOO every second Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. It's also distributed through the Pacifica Radio Network and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Hello, my name is John Shuck. My website is progressivespirit.net. In addition to the beloved community, I also have a weekly syndicated show called Progressive Spirit. The website, again, for podcasts and information is progressivespirit.net. The beloved community is all about resources for activism. I usually try to do the show live, but this week I had family visiting and instead recorded this interview with Dr. Cynthia McKinney. And if I could find one word to describe Cynthia McKinney, it would be irrepressible. Irrepressible. She does not give up on truth and goodness. Dr. Cynthia McKinney is a former U.S. Congresswoman from Georgia, serving from 1992 to 2002, and then again from 2004 to 2006. In 2008, she ran for president as the Green Party candidate. Her website is allthingscynthiamckinney.com. She tweets at Cynthia McKinney. Today, we talk about her entry into politics, racism, the various factions of the deep state, 9/11, COINTELPRO, media propaganda, Hollywood, the Israel lobby, and the wars. Before the actual interview began, I told her that my scheduled March interview with Kevin Barrett had been censored and canceled after a smear campaign in which Kevin was called all kinds of icky names like anti-Semite and conspiracy theorist and Holocaust denier. Dr. McKinney has been the target of smear campaigns similar to that, and I told her I hoped KBOO would air the interview. So if you are hearing this on KBOO from 9 to 10 a.m. on Friday, August 10th, I guess she made it past the censors. Welcome, Dr. Cynthia McKinney, to the beloved community.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to come on your show, and I hope that we actually allow the audience, or that the audience is allowed to hear our conversation.
I do, too. So, first of all, how's that sound, Dr. McKinney?
Well, it sounds unusual, actually, because getting a PhD is something that I have long wanted to do. I've been in so many different PhD programs, but the timing was just not right, and so I never really finished. I was ABD, and I was ABD from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, and then I was accepted into Berkeley, and I tried to defer, and that turned into a fiasco. And so eventually, by the time I was ready, and I telegraphed that to some of the family friends, and they said, Cynthia, you need to be at Antioch University. Now, the strange thing about Antioch was that I had heard of, actually, the Antioch College students invited me to speak at their graduation. I was absolutely blown away by the school when I went there, and I told them, if I had known about you guys, my son would have graduated from Antioch University. Instead, he ended up going to University of British Columbia in Canada. But the thing that was so impressive about Antioch College, well, there were many things. One, it's the alma, it was, I guess, and I should say now, the alma mater of Coretta Scott King. And they admitted her into the education program at a time when there was segregation. And so Black people were not supposed to attend that school. But Antioch made the decision that they were going to admit her and that she was going to finish the program. So she went into the program, and then part of the requirement for graduation was a practicum of actual teaching experience. And there was another problem, because none of the local schools in Ohio wanted to have this Black student, not knowing, of course, what she was and who she was going to become in the future. But she was subjected to the same Jim Crow that everybody else was at the time. And Antioch just refused to accept no. And they were able to find some place for Coretta to do her practicum, and she ended up graduating from Antioch College. Now, Antioch was also founded by Horace Mann, a person who said, whose famous saying is, you should be ashamed of yourself if you die without having improved the lot of mankind, something like that. And so that's the spirit with which the school was born. And I recently found out that Rod Serling went there, you know, so they allow you to cook your creative juices. As it turns out, the law school that my son attended is a spinoff from the Antioch University Law School. So that was fabulous for me to learn after the fact. And so then I ended up actually going to Antioch, where I had complete academic freedom, and I got my PhD in 2015. And here's the thing that may be pertinent to our discussion today, and that is that my dissertation chairman is a wonderful guy who founded the PhD program at Antioch University. And of course, you might need also, I should say, that there was some concern about me actually matriculating there. I mean, you know, it wasn't like the arms were open. This is after my congressional career. And of course, I have some established, very powerful people who consider me to be their enemy, but I don't do anything to them. I just tell the truth, but they have done a lot to me. And so that was totally known, and the concerns were overridden, and I was admitted into the program. On my dissertation committee also served Dr. Peter Dale Scott, and he is the individual who coined the term that everyone uses today to describe what's going on, and that's deep state. No, we didn't have a name for it. There might have been, you know, some people call shadow government or whatever, but Peter Dale Scott is the one who wrote the book on it, defined it, coined the phrase, and along with deep state, the deep state acts through deep politics, and the way that we, the observers of the actions of the deep state, become aware of their activities is because of deep events. So all of this comes from Dr. Peter Dale Scott, whose influence I hope can be understood throughout my dissertation.
Because the deep state is something you experienced, first of all, perhaps before you analyzed it, you experienced it in your time in Congress.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. But I would have to say that I experienced it even before then. I experienced it, well, let's put it this way. Because I was involved through my family's involvement in the civil rights movement, I remember my first sit-in, right? This is back before the Civil Rights Act was passed, and we had planned this activity, this action at that time. It was the Sheraton Biltmore Hotel in the downtown Atlanta, and I had never been into a place like that. It was marble, and there was, you know, these railings, and I thought they were gold, but you know, it's brass, but I thought it was gold, and I just couldn't believe it. We went in there. There might have been maybe 25 or 30 of us, but it was really my dad, and I was just along for the ride, and we took our lunches, our boxes of chicken, and we sat on the steps, and we ate, and we refused to leave, you know. And it was actions like that throughout the South that were the reason that the Civil Rights Act was passed. So, and that was in 1964. So, it was because of the unique positioning, I think, of my family that I was aware of a deep state. When my father decided that, hey, you know, it's time out for protesting public policy. We need to make public policy. And so my dad began to run for office. Well, of course, you know, the deck was stacked against him and anybody else who was black. And so this is, of course, before the Voting Rights Act. But then in 1965, when the Voting Rights Act was passed, then the election laws were changed, which allowed my dad to actually win an election. Before, he had run, but he was never able to win. So then he actually won the election and became a member of the Georgia legislature, where he stayed for over 30 years. He remained there. But during this time, there was the concerted effort of the U.S. government to kick out all of the black elected officials, to kick them out of office. And so what that meant was that there were various stings that were run, the wanted to put them in jail. My father was, there were cars that were parked in front of our house. I mean, literally all of my teenage years while I was in school. I mean, you know, we were trailed. My mom is talking on the phone to her sister-in-law. She hangs up the phone and decides, oh, I need to make another call. So she picks the phone back up, and her conversation with her sister-in-law is being played back, and she could hear it. So, you know, all of this stuff about, how, you know, the outrage about the FBI doing this and the NSA doing that. Well, you know, that was a part of my upbringing. I understood that there was some, that there were some people who were acting on orders from the various echelons of the U.S. government. And so from a very early age, I understood that there was something going on. Now, just what it was for me, was left for me to find out. So eventually I ran for office, and when I became a member of the Georgia legislature along with my dad. In fact, we were the only father-daughter legislative team in the country. And so then I could make phone calls to people and actually have them returned. And there was a document that was floating around. And of course, there were the COINTELPRO papers that were made public. And so I remember talking to our president, former president now, Jimmy Carter, and I asked him about some of the content in some of these documents. And without actually saying, yeah, you know, I did that and I authorized that and yeah, that happened under my watch, he did say, he had just admitted that, yeah, there, you know, it was a shame because by that time I'd had a child, and I was wondering why it was that the most retrogressive members of the Georgia legislature, who also happened to be black, were the ones that always got positive press. They always had campaign coffers full of money. They could always be counted on to be reelected. And then people like me and my dad never got positive press, never got, my dad never got positive press, got called all kinds of names and everything. And how does that happen? Just how does that happen? And that's what I wanted to know from President Carter. And so there was an acknowledgement from Carter that, yeah, there were certain things that weren't that happened that weren't right. And so then I said, okay, I'm going to read the COINTELPRO papers. And I became a student of what exactly that program entailed. So in essence, basically, what we know from COINTELPRO is that the United States government became a tool for the private interests of certain individuals who were able to leverage the power of the government, and not necessarily that they were inside the government. And we know that the United States government also didn't hesitate to kill people. They had a foreign heads of state kill program, assassination program. That's where we get all of the repeated, I think in the COINTELPRO papers, I think they only admit to 10 assassination attempts for Fidel. But of course, we know that there were many more. Then we also knew that from those papers, we learned that there was a domestic program of assassination, ridicule, torture, you name it, it was done. And in fact, in those papers, the FBI used the word neutralize in its program that targeted what it called Black nationalist hate groups. By that, they meant the SCLC, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, the Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad, also with the Nation of Islam. Let's see, SCLC, Nation of Islam, Black Panther Party was also targeted. We also know that the American Indian Movement was targeted. And when the government used the word neutralize, they meant neutralize everything before and then including killing people.
You wrote in your autobiography that every high school student should do at least one research paper on COINTELPRO.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
That stuck out because that is something that is just so basic. I mean, because of your knowledge of that, you knew fairly early, I mean, right away, really, that the September 11th official story wasn't accurate.
Yes. And I have to say that it really is because I had that background. If I had just been your average Joe Blow who decided to run for office and I was more interested in being there rather than being a difference or making a difference, then I would never have posed the questions that I posed. But it was because I came to office, and when I was doing my dissertation, well, I was writing, I wrote like 5 chapters. Let me see, I did Syria, Cuba. So I did probably about half of the dissertation from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. And in there, I was actually trying to discover who the they is. You know, they don't want this and they don't want that. So this was even before I knew about Peter Dale Scott and all of that. I still was trying to figure out who the they was. And that was the focus of my dissertation from that I never completed from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, where I was looking at the fall of the Soviet Union and what became of the countries that depended on the Soviet Union for their quote unquote freedom from the U.S. hegemony. So it was who's the they in foreign policy kind of thing. I was at Fletcher before I was in the legislature. And so my time in the legislature confirmed what I suspected was the case while I was studying for my master's. And that is that every individual who is elected to public office brings with them a particular, what I called at the time, perceptual screen. And so that is the who they are and the why they are. They bring that into the office with them. So you could absolutely say that my perceptual screen that I took to Congress was one that was built over the reading of the thousands of COINTELPRO paper pages. I've read not every one of them, but I've read pretty darn near most of them. Thousands of those pages exist. Then with my own experiences, I clearly understood that something else was going on. And you see, it's almost like what Peter Dale Scott says is you have to look at what's not there. And I didn't know that at the time, on September 11th. I didn't know that I needed to look at what was not there, but that's exactly what I looked at. Because, remember, both Dick Cheney and George W. Bush went to Tom Daschle And they asked Tom Daschle, one in a personal visit, the other one on a phone call, asked Tom Daschle not to investigate September 11th. Now, what sense does that make? It makes absolutely no sense. Unless something else is going on. And so I was, at the time, I didn't get the unless part. I just said, this doesn't make any sense. And I was outraged about it. So I wrote an op-ed. That op-ed appeared in the Washington Post, I believe. And it, oh my gosh, Juliet Alperin. I'd have to say, I wonder who she is, because she's the one that started the torrent against me. And Juliet Alperin wrote the thing about the conspiracy. But you know what my position was in the op-ed? My position was that for a regular train accident or an airplane accident, there's the National Transportation Safety Board that kicks into action, and it's got subpoena power. It's got everything that is needed in order to, and it's got independence from the partisan politics. So it has everything. In fact, it was constructed in the implementing legislation was constructed in such a way so that you could get into impartial investigations of the facts and remedies. So, for example, the National Transportation Safety Board can say, there's a defect in this wiring for Boeing 707s, and so therefore all Boeing 707s have to be rewired. I mean, they have that kind of power. So if you say that you don't want a September 11th to happen again, you have to have a impartial, thorough investigation in order to understand what happened. And here the president and the vice president both were going to the Congress and saying, don't investigate.
Well, they gave you talking points to bring back home, didn't they?
They gave us talking points, and the talking points were that we were hit because we were free. How many times did the people hear that? Over and over and over again from every member of Congress except me. Because I just couldn't say that. First of all, being black, I knew I wasn't free. And my people weren't free. My constituents weren't free. So how could I tell them they're free? I can't do that. So now then the you know, we're hit because we're free. Okay, well, since that's not the case, we got to figure out something else. And National Transportation Safety Board was not kicked into gear. Actually, every effort to conduct a real investigation was thwarted by the members of Congress too. Until finally it was the Jersey girls, really, the families of the victims, who just demanded that they do something. And so then they, you know, went into a boiler room, and well, it was probably a smoke-filled room, and cut a deal, and then, you know, made sure that their assets were in place so as to prevent any real investigation from taking place. And that's exactly what happened. So we've never had an investigation of September 11th. And I think that the people deserve to have that. In addition to that, all of these stupid wars have been justified by the events of September 11th. Now, isn't that something? That we can't have an investigation to know what happened on September 11th. So we can't say that we're going to never have it again because we don't know what happened on the first time around. And then we have every president, including President Obama, justifying his bombing of, you know, you name the Muslim country that hasn't been bombed or balkanized, Sudan split in two. I witnessed two girls from Sudan, one from the north, one from the south, and they literally embraced each other and cried because their country had been split apart. By who? by the United States, by outsiders, not by them. And so, and of course, that that guy that the popular community seems to love, that actor guy who's married to the lawyer woman. I can't even remember his name. That's, you know, but because you can get an actor to come and tell and repeat the talking points that he's been given by the deep state, then you can a certain policy that would never have been acceptable before is it's acceptable now. So that's how you get the other actor, I can't remember his name, involved on Haiti, because we have an actor who never went there. He didn't really, you know, he doesn't know anything about Haitian history, but he can testify before Congress and say all of these things. And then in the end, what we find out is that Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation were bilking Haiti for all that they can get, and still are to this very day. So we have public policy being made by Hollywood actors and actresses, which is an insult to all of the people who are in the State Department, career professionals who have gone to school, studied foreign policy, and the thinkers who are not inside the system, but who understand the system maybe more better than those people who are inside the system and always have been inside the system. And, you know, a Hollywood actor can come and just negate everything positive that could be done by our country. So, and these Hollywood actors, of course, they are owned and controlled by an element of the deep state. And Hollywood, as I tweet often, Hollywood is a tool for the deep state. And we have to know that. So anything that brings Hollywood down, I'm in favor of it.
We're going to take a break and be back with more of my interview with Dr. Cynthia McKinney. This is The Beloved Community. I'm John Shuck. Stay with us.
In the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get it back to the kids, who the hell cares? One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship him, don't let him deal with brothers. Give him guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brothers, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids.
This is The Beloved Community. Once a month, every second Friday, from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on KBOO in Portland. Live stream KBOO.FM. I'm John Shuck. My website is progressivespirit.net. My guest is Dr. Cynthia McKinney. Talking about a variety of things here, one including the COINTELPRO, which is not just an historical document, it is currently active and present, wouldn't you say?
I would absolutely say so.
But I also want to, before, include this whole Russia thing, if you can. This business about blaming Russia on the election of 2016.
Well, I guess I have to go back to that statement that you reminded me of, that every high school student needs to write a paper about COINTELPRO. And then you would have an educated citizenry knowledgeable about the abuses of power that can exist in our country. That's important background information for people to have, so that any erosion of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, any erosion is immediately attacked by the people themselves, who ultimately will be affected. As a result of me relying so much on the COINTELPRO papers to understand just exactly the political uses to which the FBI can be put, when WikiLeaks came out, I said, oh my goodness, a whole new treasure trove of original U.S. State Department documents for me to go through and look at. But of course, it's not just State Department. But at that time, the public diplomacy release on WikiLeaks was about U.S. foreign policy, which is right up my alley. That's what I studied since I was in high school. So I set about to make sure that I was able to use the WikiLeaks in my dissertation, which of course is a whole nother story, but and that's a story of censorship, because I wasn't allowed to use them only after I had written the dissertation.
And I want to talk about censorship with you too.
Then I had to go back and remove every even reference to WikiLeaks, which, you know, that is just a huge task. Well, anyway, WikiLeaks comes out, and then, of course, I'm very interested in everything that WikiLeaks does. So then, I guess, I can't remember now, maybe it was a year ago, maybe it's been a year, that WikiLeaks started the Vault 7 release. And this was really all of the CIA secrets that were out there, CIA maybe / NSA secrets about hacking and that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that the United States has the capacity, the U.S. government has the capability of doing a hack and leaving footprints that look as if the hack were committed by the Russians. So I said, okay, now this is out there. And this was really out there in the public domain before there was this allegation of Russian hacking the 2016 well, I guess, okay, so I guess it's been more than a year that Vault 7 was out, or maybe well, okay, so anyway, anyone in the audience who listens can go to the WikiLeaks Twitter feed. So that would be twitter.com/WikiLeaks. And there you can look and you can find Vault 7, or you can just search on twitter.com and search Vault, V-A-U-L-T, V as in Victor, 7, and there you will be able to, you'll be directed to those releases and all of those documents that disclose this capability of the U.S. government. So now comes this allegation that the FBI has been politicized to the point that it is targeting our president, blah, 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 blah. And I think it's very clear that there are some people who are protected and that there are some people who are not. And I've been outraged for a very long time about Hillary Clinton. And I'm glad that she's not the president of the United States. And I'm glad that she's not in the Oval Office to wreak even more terror and havoc, not only on the rest of the world, but in particular against Libya and Haiti. But Hillary Clinton, because I am totally aware of what the Clintons have done, not only in Libya, but also in Haiti, I would have thought if there were going to be any investigation, it would have been of Hillary Clinton. But there's no investigation of Hillary Clinton. The investigation is based on this allegation of 2016 election hacking. The president is right when he says, where's the server? Because the bottom line is that the FBI, at least as far as I know, is taking the word of a private company that was employed by Hillary Clinton. This is, the situation is so outrageous and at the same time so amazing. I'm just stupefied that the people of the U.S. aren't up in arms about what's going on, and the idea, the audacity of Hillary Clinton to even think about running for president again in 2020 is beyond the pale for me. So anyway, we the people of the United States are facing, I believe, how can I say this? It's a crisis. It's really a crisis. It's a governance crisis. And corruption is at an all-time high. So we've got to figure out, we the people have got to figure out a way for us to become we the people again and not be balkanized in our own, living in our own silos, one silo looking at CNN and another silo looking at Fox. We have to look at them both because they both are lying and they both are dividing the U.S. public. So now is the time for us to understand, yes, there is a deep state. Yes, that deep state is acting. The deep state is divided into factions. And what we're witnessing now is a huge, colossal fight to the death among these, what I have identified as three factions.
Yeah, what are those three factions? Because that's a really confusing part.
Well, I think if I were to draw, and I really do need to draw this up, maybe even write it up too, but, and I have some, I have, of course, the theoretical framework of Peter Dale Scott, and then at the same time, I also have the theoretical framework of a University of Connecticut professor by the name of Peter Turchin, who says that after a period of boom, there will be more individuals who feel themselves worthy of being sort of inducted into the deep state hierarchy. But unfortunately, he says that there's just not enough positions to satisfy everybody. And so there will be a fight between the existing deep state and the non-absorbed deep state. And so the deep state will sort of section off into factions, with one faction supporting, say, you know, the people, and the other faction supporting business as usual, sort of the status quo. And the new faction, of course, is going to be able to siphon off some of that old deep state support. And so the chance of the new faction actually overthrowing the old faction, now this is not Peter Turchin, this is me talking now, becomes very real. I think what has happened in the United States is that that's exactly what happened, is that there was this new faction that was able to co-opt, intimidate, threaten, however, through whatever mechanism, members of the old deep state, and so it became ascendant. The members of the old deep state, basically, those that weren't co-opted basically lost power. And then, of course, the economy goes along with it. Because back in 2007/8-ish, I had an activist from Malaysia send me an analysis of the U.S. economy, investigating, looking at the Fortune 500 companies and who the largest shareholders were of those companies. Recently, a university out of the Netherlands did a study in 2017. Their study is dated, and they found that they identified that the Fortune 500 companies of the U.S. economy are now have as larger the largest shareholders three companies, and those three companies are exactly not the ones that were in that position in 2007. So you could say that the United States has created a new set of oligarchs. And I use the word oligarch advisedly, because that's exactly what happened in the 1990s with the Soviet Union under Gorbachev and Russia under Boris Yeltsin. Yeltsin, of course, is handpicked by the U.S. deep state to lead Russia. And then during that time, all of the state assets, and of course with Soviet Union being a communist country, they basically all of the industries, all of the companies were state-owned enterprises. And then you had basically 11 people who were able to gain control after the Russian people themselves were stripped of their assets and their money. Then there were 11 people who were able to utilize international linkages, and they came into control of the entirety of the Soviet Union. What's being fought, well, of Russia, and what's being fought over now with these three factions in the United States is the two things I believe of value to these people. One is to be able to put their finger on the nuclear button, and two, the ability to strip the United States of whatever its remaining assets are. So you will see and are seeing, I believe we are seeing, the wholesale looting of the United States, of our country. So what has sparked the fight? So you had the one unified deep state at the beginning of all of this. You had the rise of a second group. And so then you had deep state divided into two factions. Then the two factions, one is less in power, the other one is ascendant. Of the two factions, members of that ascendant faction start fighting each other, and they split. That's what we're witnessing now, that the two factions are fighting, and I said, for those two points. At the same time, that has nothing to do with the Donald Trump faction. So the Donald Trump faction is the faction that was thrown away and is now trying to regain its position alongside this other faction.
My guest is Dr. Cynthia McKinney. She's talking about a lot of fascinating things like the deep state and the various factions within them. I want to talk with you about a couple of things. One is this, when I think of this whole Russian narrative, it seems to me like the American people are just being set up to get all kinds of animosity towards Russia, and then there's going to be some false flag or something, and away we go with some kind of thing against Russia, as we do with whatever enemies people want us to have be enemies with. And so thoughts about that type of media control over us. And then the other part, also connect the deep state, if you would, with Israel. I mean, talk about foreign countries who mess with our politics. I would think that Israel is bigger than Russia in many respects, and you've run into that when you first were criticizing, or first, well, not criticizing, just simply saying we need to have investigations into 9/11. It was the Israel lobby that attacked you. and how that works in terms of censorship. That I feel that sometimes we are people who are against racism and against hate crimes somehow have been, I don't know, what's the word here, influence that anything against Israel is anti-Semitic, and therefore those views need to be censored, such as in my show in March with Kevin Barrett. So I'm wondering if you could talk about how that works as well.
Okay, that's a mouthful. And I've already given you quite a mouthful. Actually a brainful. But you see, we should never have believed the media in the first place. And so if you are the kind of person who tends to believe what you read in the media and take it like, you know, kind of like you're reading the Bible because it's there, it's written, it's on television, so it's true kind of thing. Oh, no. You have to apply your brain to everything. It's just like the president said, the system is rigged. Well, guess what? If the system is rigged and we're operating within the system, then we're rigged too. And so we have to unrig ourselves. But we don't even realize the extent to which we've been rigged. But we are rigged with propaganda 24/7, 365. And so, and quite honestly, people in this country have been rigged for as long as this country has existed. Therefore, it's going to take some mighty good brain power and readiness on the part of the people to unrig not only our system but ourselves. We have to unrig ourselves first before we can unrig the system, and it's going to require us, because Donald Trump does represent one of a faction of the deep state. And if I go back into the history of that faction, that's a malevolent group of people too.
Right.
It's just that they're not ready for complete annihilation, which is what this other faction is interested in, because this other faction is involved in all of these wars. These wars. Okay, let me talk about the media, say one more thing about media control. Why do I say that? I say that because it's rife throughout the COINTELPRO papers that the FBI and the CIA had publishing houses, journalists, media outlets, professors, universities, you could almost say every facet of life in the United States was touched by the CIA, which is against the CIA charter. Remember, CIA is proscribed from operating inside the United States, but it did, and that's what the COINTELPRO papers revealed. And so, and then of course the COINTELPRO papers also reveal the extent to which the media that we trust, like New York Times, St. Louis Times Dispatch, Christian Science Monitor, Atlanta newspapers, the Atlanta Constitution, all of these papers had a relationship with the FBI. The relationship between the U.S. media and the intelligence services is one of longstanding. Therefore, we have to be able to apply some very real brain power to an analysis of what we're reading and understand that what we're reading is, how can I put it? Well, let me tell you which is also what got me into trouble in the Congress. I tried to train my staff to do. And this is what I would tell them. We have to be able to see the invisible, hear the unspoken, and read the unwritten. So it's almost application that I had come up with to make sense of the various things that I knew and was experiencing is exactly the same thing that Dr. Peter Dale Scott says we have to do in order to understand the deep state, and we must analyze what's not there. So what I tell my students is that in order for us to know what's not there, we have to know what is there. And that requires deep research. We have to be able to spend the time to do the deep research. And then we have to have a different framework for our leaders, because right now we also have a crisis of misleadership, many people have said. Well, what I say, since my PhD is in leadership and change, what I say is if we have a crisis of misleadership, then that means we also have a crisis of misfollowership, because a leader exists only where there are followers. And if the followers are being misdirected and misled repeatedly, then that's a crisis too.
Right.
And that is exactly what is happening. So now you asked me about the Israel lobby.
Yes.
What I can say is that the Israel lobby is the most powerful lobby in all of Washington, D.C. They are able to take your tax dollars and your children and send them off to war and then bring them back home. Well, if we're lucky enough to bring them home alive, their bodies are maimed, their brains are addled, or otherwise they're coming home in coffins. This is madness on the part of people who allow this to take place.
Dr. Cynthia McKinney, speaking truth here on the beloved community. I want to give you a few minutes to talk about before we're just about out of time, but I want you to talk about your program of power cells to bring people together.
Well, based on all that you have heard so far, what I have divined is that we need a program for unity. We need to be able to we need a program that will teach us how to unrig ourselves so that we can unite and not fall for the divide and rule tactic that is used every time successfully by the deep state. And so if we can unrig ourselves and eliminate that tactic of divide and rule, I think we can defeat the deep state and we can restore ethical governance to our country. That is the objective of Power Cells. So maybe the next time I can go into a little bit more detail, but right now the Power Cells is just an idea that's running around in my head based on the methodologies that were honed by corporations with the total quality management and managing and leading change that has theories that have been developed in the behavioral sciences.
I will have you back on again, Dr. Cynthia McKinney. This was very refreshing to hear some truth about what we are facing in the United States and in our world at this time. Your website is All Things Cynthia McKinney.
That's right, allthingscynthiamckinney.com. And then, of course, that's the preferred way if you want to contact me directly, because I get so much on Facebook. My Facebook is Cynthia McKinney Official, and my Twitter is just my name, Cynthia McKinney. So you can see what I'm talking about every day, because I am a Twitter I'm a part of the Twitterati, I guess you call it.
The Twitterati.
Yes.
So, okay, here's a final question before you go. Are you going to run for president again or get in Congress again?
Time will tell.
All right. Cynthia McKinney, thank you so much for everything you're doing and for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Beloved Community is heard every month on the second Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. For a podcast of this episode, go to kboo.fm/beloved community or progressivespirit.net. That's progressivespirit.net. I'm John Schock. Be well.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning, next at 10 o'clock, Valley Views talks to the co-founder of the Corvallis chapter of SURJ, Showing Up for Racial Justice. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, the Digital Divide talks to Christine Hassel of Geek Girl Con about empowering women and girls to pursue their love of science, technology, literature, and gaming. These KBOO programs are made possible by your support. If you'd like to become a member, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, this is Bob Madoff. Did you know that almost a quarter of Oregon's children are food insecure? That means they don't have access to affordable, nutritious food. Join me for episode 2 of Local Folks Podcast and Experience Distribution Day, the time when